I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. This week, we're going to talk about back pain, the Olympics, and Mr. Met. My guests are Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports and Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Great to be here.
Rachel, back pain is on your mind. I hope not because you have pain in your back, but you're on.
No. Thankfully, no. Not true, though, for two major sports figures. Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr has missed months of coaching and probably will miss the end of the NBA Finals with complications from a fairly routine back surgery he had 2 years ago. Tiger Woods has had four back surgeries, the latest one just weeks ago that he declared a great success. Days after that, however, he was arrested for a DUI he said was caused by a mix of medications, including powerful painkillers like Vicodin. And their stories really highlight this awful dilemma that millions of Americans face, and that is to treat chronic back pain with heavy-duty and potentially addictive drugs or undergo the knife, or what some people are faced with, essentially doing both. I'm guessing both of you gentlemen, like me, have either had serious back pain or know someone who has.
Craig, I'll let you answer that first. My guess is we're probably going to both answer in the positive.
Oh, absolutely. As a man approaching middle age who hunches like nobody's business and has bad genes, the back really, really hurts. And that dilemma, do you go under surgery or do you fall into the world of very powerful prescription drugs that is all over the news these days is a big question. And it's one that, you know, reminds me that all these athletes are people too, and they're facing a lot of the same hard decisions a lot of us are facing.
Bill Walton is one guy who comes to mind. He has acknowledged that before the radical surgery that finally eased his chronic back pain, he'd thought about killing himself. It was that serious. And he's not alone in terms of the depression and the despair that this sort of pain can bring. I don't know what else to say except that I really feel for people suffering as Tiger Woods and Steve Kerr have suffered, and my hope is that, like Bill Walton, they will find some combination of physical therapy, surgery, or some other route to pain-free living. It was great fun to talk to Walton recently and see how his life has changed for the better, and I can only hope that will happen for some of these other folks.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. Kerr certainly has said he's sworn off surgery. He had such a terrible experience. But the statistics show that several surgeries really are very successful in treating pain. So I think it's really incumbent upon everybody to just kind of do research and figure out what works, because there is no panacea that works for everybody.
All right, it's my turn. Of the five cities originally bidding to host the 2024 Summer Olympics, three have backed out. That left just Paris and Los Angeles bidding for the Games. And instead of picking between those two, the International Olympic Committee may choose both. The Wall Street Journal reported this week that the IOC, and I'm quoting now, is leaning toward a deal that would award the 2024 Olympics to Paris and the 2028 Olympics to L.A. If true, this would be the first time the IOC has named two Summer Olympics hosts at once. And I read this deal as a desperate move by the IOC. With more cities wising up, almost all of them, in fact, the IOC is desperate to lock in two major cities while there are still two major cities willing to be locked in, perhaps even enthusiastic about being locked in. We haven't heard from the populace yet. We sure did from the populace in Boston when it was time for them to scream. Or is there some other explanation for this two-city deal?
I think there's no question it's desperation. We've seen, certainly with the Winter Olympics especially, all the cities that have dropped out just not wanting the expense and the headaches. But I actually see a silver lining in this. I think part of that report was that LA is trying to leverage some funding out of the IOC in the interim to
deal.
Sort of agree to this deal. Exactly, the deal makers. And few people know this, but the 84 games in L.A. were, I think, the most financially successful ones, certainly in modern history. They produced a surplus that resulted in the L.A. 84 Foundation, which funds research and, I think, primarily youth sports. And so I would love to see L.A. parlay this deal-making into some long-term benefit like that, or even just break even. At this stage, that might be the best we can hope for.
I would love to see this as the precursor to something that a lot of people have talked about would make more sense when it comes to the Olympics, and that is, instead of using a beauty pageant to pick a new winner every 4 years, you have a rotation of three or four cities or four or five cities that could host the Olympics on a regular routine basis. You know, the infrastructure that goes into these things and the facilities that need to be built are what kills these cities. There's no reason why you can't use them once or twice, more than once or twice. Have these things go from LA to Paris to London to Asia to Africa and back again, and you might find a little bit more economic viability in some of these games.
I really like that idea, because then there would be fewer cities in which the poor would be persecuted, instead of alternating cities in which people are dumped out of their homes and told to move somewhere else far away from their work.
Less overhead in the persecution, yes.
Yeah. I think we have to be a little bit careful with financially successful games when we have to think about who they were financially successful for.
Yeah, I mean, certainly just producing a surplus would be something unusual for an Olympic Games. And also, I have to say, this is a double-edged sword, but generally speaking, the games in already developed countries, I would argue, produce fewer ill effects of the kinds that you're talking about. Not zero, but but fewer of them.
I'd say that's right. Rio being an excellent example of that.
Yes, exactly. And so that's another argument to kind of tighten the rotation.
Craig, the floor is yours.
On Wednesday night, the world-famous mascot of the New York Mets, Mr. Met, made some news when he flipped the bird. He flew the Freedom Rocket. He gave the Bronx salute to some fans at Citi Field. I guess the fans were taunting him, and Mr. Met had just had it. Immediately after that, and when it broke wide on the internet, the New York Mets announced that they were firing the man in the Mr. Met costume. But then something funny happened on Thursday, and throughout the day on Thursday, people felt a little bit of sympathy for Mr. Met. The Mets are having a terrible year. Things have just been going bad for them. And if you had to go into an office every day where things were going as badly for you as they were going for Mr. Met, you might flip somebody the bird too. It's going to happen. It's a very human and or mascot response. What happened after that is Mr. Met was not fired. The Mets decided to just reassign the man in Mr. Met's costume. And then even they, by the end of the day, were, I think, having a bit of a laugh with it. And I think the lesson here is that when sports teams and sports leagues go on to level discipline for bad behavior, it's not really about what's right and what's wrong or how bad ethically or morally the behavior is. It's about what the fans are willing to tolerate, how they react, how much pressure they put on the team and on the entity to do something. They felt bad for Mr. Met. They didn't care. And in this case, I think it's going to end up with a quasi-happy ending. And I think it matters very little when it comes to a relatively harmless thing like Mr. Met and his finger. But we should probably think about that when people are disciplined or not disciplined for a DUI or spousal abuse, or maybe when they're being blackballed like Colin Kaepernick seems to be. It's all about the fans' response and what they'll tolerate from a sports team, not necessarily what's actually going on in the underlying behavior.
Rachel, are you good with this extrapolation from the singular case of Mr. Met to the culture at large?
I'm not sure I would make that great a leap based on a cartoon baseball character, but I will say, Craig, you make a great point about the power of the public, and I think that's only increased in the age of social media. It's one of the upsides of social media, and the public called it right. This was a mascot misdemeanor. This was not a felony. I would say a felony is literally losing your head. A mascot taking off the head, that is the cardinal sin. He did not commit it. Therefore, he does not deserve to be fired. Mets made the right call.
I was astonished to learn that Mr. Met had a middle finger. I thought he was like, I thought he was like Mickey Mouse.
There was actually a lot of debate about that. Mr. Met actually has four, doesn't have a middle finger. And the internet lawyers were trying to get Mr. Met off on a technicality here. But he also did the little cross-arm gesture you tend to see in certain parts of New York. So his intent was very clear.
So that was unmistakable. Did the lawyers defending Mr. Met wear big foam heads too? This would be a
big foam powder wigs.
Yeah, this would be a courtroom scene without parallel, as far as I'm concerned.
It was the Philly fanatic standing up saying, "Who among us?"
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports and Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Bill.